Blog Talk Radio.
Fez amor, mas só por solidão. Teu corpo desejou, eu fui a opção. Nós dois de novo, na sua cama. A gente combinou que era só tesão. Melhor uma retrô do que ficar na mão. Você me quer, depois reclama. Quer meu corpo, eu te empresto. Tem que ser a minha condição. Você cobra que eu não presto. Eu não quero outra decepção. Se não concorda, eu tô fora. Foi você quem me usou quando eu só quis amar. Depois descartou, tive que me virar. Agora é fácil dizer que me ama. Que ainda aceito ou desengana. A gente combinou que era só tesão. Melhor uma retrô do que ficar na mão. Você me quer, depois reclama. Quer meu corpo, eu te empresto. Tem que ser na minha condição. Que eu não presto. Eu não quero outra decepção. Concorda, eu tô fora. Foi você que me usou quando eu só quis amar. Depois descartou, disse que me virar. Agora é fácil dizer que me ama. E ainda tá mal resolvida, querendo voltar. Procuro outra pessoa pra te saciar. Vai ser do meu jeito, você já não manda.
Hello world, happy Saturday night. You're listening to Bad Company. If you're brought to you by a group on Late Night Poets, a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets. And we have anthologies that are available on amazon.com under the same moniker. And I would like to send out congratulations to all the other hosts and hostesses of Late Night Poets radio shows, as we rank number 11 on BeatSpot's Late Night Podcast Media. And so congratulations, everybody, on that. And tonight's show is based on a contest that I ran with Louis Wildov called Bring Us Retro. And they said, anything retro will do, whether it's fond memory or a telling of the times. So that's the gist of tonight's show. I'm just going to check the studio real quick here. Oh, we have a caller. Hello, Lauren Yvonne.
Well, good evening, Gray. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. Looking forward to tonight's show. I assume you got a great lineup.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate you calling in. Thank you very much. All right, so I'm going to grab the first piece here. I'll paste this into the group. If you wouldn't mind reading this for me, Lauren, please.
All right. This is called A Higher Holiday in 1968. The Écrivain won. On a time, I shared a crash pad with several other guys. It's been many years now. Amazing how time flies. It was a gorgeous holiday, the autumn of the year. We celebrated Thanksgiving with a turkey and some beer. We also had a suitcase loaded to the brim with pot. We stuffed the turkey with it, and the others smoked a lot. Before the day was over, quite a crowd had come and gone. They were passed out in the hallway and sprawled out on the lawn. Dennis and his girlfriend had concocted quite a feast. The turkey was stupendous, and the dressing not the least. We even had bread pudding, cranberries, and pumpkin pie. Also, candied sweet potatoes, the best money could buy. The apartment that we lived in actually was half a house. The other half was vacant, so the neighbors didn't grouse. In houses on both sides of us, neighbors must have gone away to be with friends and family for this special holiday. It was perfect for a party, and we played it to the max. I remember every detail without stretching any facts. Before the day was over, beer cans were stacked up walls, and those waiting for the bathroom were backed up down the hall. On a small scale, it was Woodstock, mixed up with New Year's Eve, and in the end, the tough part was getting them to leave. I don't smoke marijuana or cigarettes at all, but I was higher than a kite and so light I couldn't fall. I felt like $1 million and seemed to walk on air. People going in and out seemed to drift from chair to chair. There were couples necking everywhere and room to room, and the impact of our happening was like a sonic boom. I think I would have to say that this experience will last in memory throughout my life as a high point in my past. I went to college in the day and had a job at night. That's where I got the turkey, and things did turn out all right. I was working at a photo place, and the others weren't employed, but when they'd get spot labor, I was really overjoyed. The day before Thanksgiving, back in 1968, one of them was working, and a strange thing all relate. He met a stranger passing through with a suitcase crammed with pot. The guy was bound for Frisco, said he'd appreciate a lot if he could spend Thanksgiving crashing at our pad. We felt it was the thing to do, as he'd contribute what he had. He was super nice and friendly. It seemed to be all right. We figured we could handle it for at least a day and night. It turned into a party that went on for several days. The air was flat polluted with an acrid drifting haze. We had one guy playing guitar, young and serious and gaunt. He was mainly into protest and strumming Alice's Restaurant. We had hippies, hoods, and street punks, and a drag queen here and there, girls in revealing dresses, and one with purple hair. One little blonde had sequins, and her hair was like spun gold. Her eyes were blue as summer skies. She suicided, I was told. The guitar player was named John, and his and went bad as well. He overdosed in later years over a woman, I hear tell. There probably are others that I just don't know about. Out of any large group, some will die soon, without a doubt. It was the tail end of the 60s, in Nebraska, of all places. There were many fascinating folks, and some boasted several faces. When everything was over, and the guests had all departed, a lot of things were missing that had been there when we started. But I guess nobody's perfect, and it certainly was worth it. Nothing like it's ever happened since that Thanksgiving day. And somehow I've lost contact with those folks along the way. I'd dearly love to see them, or at least a special few, but I don't know how to find them. I simply have no clue. And as life draws down its close, often find my gaze drifting back to other years and fantastic holidays. End poem.
Beautiful read, Laura. And would you mind reading his SoundCloud? I mean, his author's notes, please?
Yes, yes. Believe me, there wasn't one second that day when I thought about anything but the present. The 60s were enquab. There's no form here, per se, just rhyme. This is a true story, and it's not easy to put stories like this into verse, since I'm rather ill just now. Excuse me, I just dropped something I have to pick up. Since I'm rather ill, where are we here? Since I'm rather ill just now, this probably could be improved on, but I don't feel up to doing much else with it now.
Jim, wonderful back. Read, Lauren. It wasn't engaging.
Huh?
It wasn't engaging, fascinating, right? I mean, you know, he speaks of this day with reverence and remembrance. Such an appealing situation for a college student to be in. You know, your house is just filled to the brim with people, and everybody's having a good time, eating, feasting, and partying. And then when it's all over and said and done, the people left and things were missing. And, you know, he guesses nobody's perfect, and it certainly was worth it. But, you know, what a special day to have.
It was, I'll tell you, parties like that were different back in the 60s than they were perhaps in the 50s. There's an innocence about the 50s, but you got into the 60s, and things were a little more, well, grown up, shall we say. And it was a heady time. So I can really connect with this as a child of the 60s, especially in 1968. It really brings you back, doesn't it? And look, Ekri Van does a fantastic job with the rhyming. This could not have been easy. This must have driven him to despair more than on one occasion to try and get the rhyming right. But he got it right, and it flows, and the story is very enjoyable.
Absolutely. Excellent comment, Mark. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to post the next link here. Okay. This is called Snow Day by Andrew W. Snow Day. Snow falls on the ground like a blanket all around. Covers everything for miles. Brings nothing but smiles. For the kids to go out and play because of no school today. Building snowmen and many forts, making snow angels of the sorts, throwing snowballs everywhere, getting it all in their hair. They run around having fun until the day is done. Back inside their houses they go, packing in a lot of snow, while drinking hot chocolate by the fire. Another snow day is what they desire. But when they wake up the next day, all the snow has melted away. End poem. And that was wonderful. I mean, you know, it really takes you back to those snow days as a child, hoping that there would be one more day of snow for you to chill out and relax with your friends, throwing snowballs and making forts. I thought it was just a fantastic rhyming poem. It had excellent flow and imagery. What did you think, Lauren?
Well, the language is very clean in this particular poem. The poet does not try to do too much, nor should he, because this is about kids and playing and snowballs and snow days and snowmen and forts. So you I don't think you want language that is highly metaphorical or anything else. This is perfect just the way it is. You know, they run around having fun until the day is finally done. And the rhyming is very, very good. And it tells a story that is ultimately relatable. Now, how can you go wrong?
Absolutely. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to post up the next one here. And this one is part of a storyline that you can Google John or Catherine in poetry.com to find the continuation of this story. So I just wanted to mention that. Anytime you're ready, Lauren.
Sure. Give me one second. This is called How John Got to Know Catherine, a Common Jelly for Storyline, by St. John 4:9. You have been to J.R.'s office already. Yeah, buddy. Here he is, 4 years back, on his revolving, by the bub, cigar and lights. Long time for it to be stubbed. J.R.'s retinue of staff included four blockbusting blondes, so gorgeous that each visitor sang on their view. Here, one of them named Estania hoped and hipped and seesawed in ramp walk after a light knock. J.R. spoke a wisp in phone, and Estania walked in, spreading a huge smile, and then turned her face serious, gesticulating to J.R. a fax printout. J.R. saw the fax and whispered, "Estania, come in." After 20, and Estania smiled and left. J.R. relaxed back to pour at fax. His eyes ran from word to word, and as they did so, his eyes widened, and his eyebrows grew narrow. Then further down the fax, his eyes flashed anger, and he moved to the edge of his seat. Arthur tried hard to peer into the fax page, but he was a bit late. J.R. was already folding it in two, but his nose flared red, fists were tightened, and he muttered incomprehensible words. But Arthur got sight of a few words. They screamed, "Catherine, 17 years old, daughter of, kidnapped, transported to Port Marshall, Jamaica, and terminated for $2 million. Now, J.R. straightened, and his nimble fingers ran on phone. Soon after, Estania walked in. She drew remote curtains, and theater dimness came about in J.R.'s chamber. Soon the wall opposite J.R. went live and showed a school campus. It was Catherine's school, which readers have already seen earlier. The live clip went on to show the entire premises, and then it zeroed in on students and people, naming each one of them with short histories. Soon Catherine was zeroed in and put in focus, and her details cropped up. Soon, the clip began to show the route that Catherine took each day from her home to school, and then it was the turn of her home. Each nook and corner came alive, and each space in that home which Catherine used was shown. And clip displayed words, "Top Secret," and stopped. J.R. barked a bit at Estania, and she left. J.R. turned back to his communication hub to be continued, happily, sadly, it's over, end poem.
Great read, Lawrence. And, this is a fantastic, interesting poem. It really puts you into a situational awareness of what's going on in the office of this man and reacting to this fax that comes through about somebody who's been terminated for $2 billion. Just a fascinating, intriguing poem, and I'd like to hear more of it as well. But you did an excellent job reading it, Lawrence. Thank you. What do you think?
Well, if you know the storyline, it's going to move the story along, obviously, as the latest installment. But if you don't know the storyline, I kind of feel like I'm caught in the middle between things, but it's intriguing, quite frankly. And the way he presents it is interesting. I like the way he wrote this, and certainly keeps your attention. But, definitely need to know what the storyline is and what happened initially.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent comment, Lawrence. Thank you very much. And I'm going to grab the next poem, and I will post that up in a second. Okay, there we go. All right, I'm grabbing the next poem here. This is by Den the Pen. It's called Going Home. Going home. Going back was not a good idea. You think I'd have learned by then not to try to recapture childhood of my days of yore and when. I'd oft been told, you can't go back. It can never be done. It can never be the same. Yet my mind, my heart, my memories drove me back there to regain the optimism of promise, the light, the sunshine, and my friends. Now once more to grab the good life, a happy poem that never ends. And so I found the building, well, most of them at least, hidden among the giants of progress, those whose march had never ceased. I sought out the old post office, whose clock never missed a beat, to find the building and clock had gone, put my memories in retreat. Well, at least I'll have my friends, I thought, bringing joy within my heart. They'll be glad I came home to make a final start. I searched a long time for my mates, my would-be girlfriends too. Most had gone, never to return, but yet I finally found a few. In some I found the spirit gone, aspirations drowned in booze. Most of the girls I'd known had married, now their spirits sang the blues. My old friends, those I remembered, speaking words I could not hear. Most of them just looked right through me, just as if I wasn't there. Wandering around, I found others, searching sadly just like me. At least we could all see and hear each other. Yet how could this really be? It seems to me that we all returned to recapture something we had lost, having financed our journey back at the greatest possible cost. Now I feel myself pulled gently towards the light. I feel no dread, for I know I will be home at last, and that my temporal shell is shed. End poem. Then in his author's notes, he says, going back to a town that you remember well, only to find it very unfamiliar and cold, you realize it was the people that really made the place special for you in your youth. Although some buildings remain iconic within your mind, sad to see that the post office with the clock, which had counted off the minutes, hours, and days of my life, was now absent. Now what does that say to your spiritual awareness? Even some of your friends who remain there in the temporal state seem purely avatars of spirits long departed. Never mind. For as my younger brother said on his deathbed, oh, well, that's life, or not. Of course, I'm not really dead, or am I? My hometown is Waipukuru in the central Hawke's Bay region of New Zealand's North Island. We did have a Kiwi version of Greyhound buses. It was called Newman's Bus Lines. And the picture is prompt, and it's Pictures of Home by Judy Hall. But oh, that was beautiful. I mean, it was, the reality of your fantasy set in. And in reality, you can't go back home. You can never return home because home is never going to be the same. I remember that that quote, that as soon as you leave, home changes. And it will never be the same place as it was that you left. So just an excellent write then. And what did you think, Lauren?
Yeah, wasn't it Tom Wolfe who wrote that book, You Could Never Go Home Again, I think? I'm not sure. This is a poignant piece. And he writes from New Zealand, of all places, which is to hell and gone. I mean, it takes most of a day to get there, so it is remote. And being remote, you kind of feel cut off from the world, and I think he did a really good job of detailing what he expected to find and what he didn't find when he went back. The buildings were no substitute for his friends, but his friends were mostly gone, and he had to search hard to find people he knew. only to come to the realization that things do change. Time does pass. And even if you try to recapture the magic of a youth and all the people that you knew and everybody young enough to have dreams in front of them, the whole world at your disposal, and then to find out what the actuality of the matter was can be very depressing. I like the way he wrote this. It was well written. And he definitely gets his point across with any number of lines that trigger emotion. Yet my mind, my heart, my memories drove me back there to regain the optimism of the promise, the life, the sunshine, and my friends. It's a great piece.
Absolutely. Beautiful comment, Lawrence. And I'd like to welcome Dexter to the show, Duke of St. Bailey.
Hi, Dex.
Hey.
Hey, Dex.
Glad I could make
it.
Hey, Laurent. Hey, Gray. Fantastic, right?
Absolutely. Would you like to comment any further?
Yeah. This is a great write, you know, and, you know, things will never be the same. And, you know, he pulled on a lot of the different heartstrings as far as, you know, the optimism and promise, you know. That's one place that kind of hit home for me is that, you know, I think more than anything, obviously you miss the friends, but he captures that idea of that you got the whole world in front of you, or you got the life by the short and curlies. I guess you feel like you in that moment, you know, when you're there, and now those kinds of things are behind you. And I, you know, he captures the old buildings. The buildings start changing, and he brings up the post office, but I think everybody can think of that building when they were young that's gone now, or that place. So I think that this is a great write because it is personal to him, but I think everybody can take it and apply it to them, you know. And so I just thought it was a fantastic piece.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Dexter. Okay, Dexter, I've got the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind reading it, please.
Not at all. Yeah, I'm bringing up. Oh, for the Good Old Days by A Shack in the Sky. I like to watch two boxers in the ring. To see them trading punches makes me sing. The single greatest pleasure that I know is to see a fighter floored by a knockout blow. There's nothing like the friendly atmosphere of sitting in the pub and drinking beer with my pals when I'm intoxicated and spinning yarns that I have fabricated. And when I'm tired and feel that I need a rest, a cowboy movie shows what I like the best. I love it when the villain comes to town and the sheriff draws his gun to shoot him down. A game of poker on a Sunday night can fill me with a glow of sheer delight. I love it when my luck is running hot. I feel so happy when I take the pot. Yes, those were the happiest days in all my life. They happened just before I met my wife. But now I know she's happier than me. Her greatest joy was to end my revelry. End poem.
Excellent read. And that was a fantastic tale of, you know, life before marriage, the good old days. And, you know, he was living this exuberant, fantastic life, and he got married, and that's it. It was all done for. And now he's got the last laugh because it was ending his revelry. And I thought it was just a beautiful presentation of that storyline. So excellent, right? Fantastic read, Dex. And what did you think, Lauren?
I liked it quite a bit. You know, when you get married, you might have certain assumptions, and you find out very quickly most of those assumptions are vapor, because if you expect to continue the same old carousal, hey, hon, going out with the boys, no, I don't think so. Occasionally, perhaps, certainly, but no, you can't be healthy all the time. I like A. Shaknovsky writes very well, and this particular piece is, again, very relatable.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Dexter, what did you think of the poem that you read?
You know, the way this poem starts out is classic for capturing a time and age, you know, because even boxing isn't the same anymore. You know, the day and age of the old school heavyweight bout that everybody was looking forward to is kind of came and went. The day of everybody sitting in the pub is kind of came and went. You know what I mean? People still do it, obviously, but, you know, even drinking and driving is totally changed and in that aspect. But I just think of that, there's that Jerry Rafferty song, "It Was You, Woman, Put Away All Those Silly Dreams," you know, that right on down the line, you know, it was put it all away for, you know, you threw away all of these things, you know, and at the end of the day, I guess you can hope that it was worth it in a way. So, but I thought that this was a fantastic write.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. Okay, Laurent, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. This is called "It Happened in Eighth Grade Gym Class" by Patty Mike. It happened in the gym one morning during shared seventh and eighth grade PE class. We were warming up, stretching, and preparing for the activities from the teacher. There I sat on a hardwood floor doing sit-ups when it happened. I felt the increasing buildup of the explosive gas within my lower posterior. I tried to hold it all in, but there was no use. The beast was banging at the gates, scraping at the door. Despite all my rage, I blew the rat from the cage. It echoed, bouncing off the walls, reverberating from the hardwood into every single ear hole and nasal passage of that gym. They all knew that it was from me. They let me know it, too. Worst week ever. End poem.
And in his author's notes, he says, "A scar from childhood. This poem is about a time when I was in junior seventh and eighth grade gym class, and while we were warming up doing sit-ups, I felt a huge fart trying to escape. I tried to hold it in, but there was no use, and I ripped the huge fart that everyone in the gym heard and bust out laughing. It really was the worst of week for me, week ever for me, and they were merciless. Now I look back and laugh, but then I was never more embarrassed than that day." Yeah, that would harm you for life. I mean, you know, the fart that took them all out, and nothing you could do about it. So you had to grin and bear it, so to speak. Just a fantastic poem. What did you think, Dexter?
Oh, this is one of the more funny poems that I've read or heard in a long time. I could once I started realizing what he did, such a kind of sophisticated. I mean, he wrote it in such a, the beast was banging at the cage. I almost couldn't take. I got to applaud Laurent for holding it together on the read, because this is like, and I understand, yeah, that was one of the most embarrassing times, but holy cow, did he nail this right on the feeling, the everything, and that's what makes it so perfect. So this is very well done by Patty Mike.
Great comment, Dexter, thank you. And Laurent, what are your thoughts?
This is done so well, tongue-in-cheek, and very deliberate presentation, very matter-of-fact. The metaphors that Dex just mentioned, the beast banging at the gate, scribbling at the door, blowing the rat from the cage, are all delivered with a very flat, calm tone, which makes it, to me, even funnier. The ending, the worst week ever, it comes so quickly and hits you that even though you're preparing to laugh as you approach the last line, when the last line hits, it then frees you to laugh, and boy, it's a very funny piece, very good.
Absolutely. Excellent comment. Thank you, Lawrence. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is by Marvin Goldfarb. It's called I'm an American and Jewish Too. I'm an American through and through, but on the spiritual side of me, I still am a Jew. So I salute the red, white, and blue, and I say, I will always fight for you. But in temple, with skullcap on my head, I declare to the flag of the white and blue, both Hashem and I love you, end poem. And this is an excellent expression of who you are and being proud of it. And I thought he did a fantastic job with this brevity, capturing the essence of that whole subject, and just beautifully done. What are your thoughts, Lawrence?
Oh, I've got to agree with you completely. It's short, it's to the point, but it's, with the Marvin, it's always from the heart, and I can see that his heart is in the right place, so my hat's off to him.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lawrence. Thank you. And Dexter, what did you think?
I agree, you know, and, you know, I'm an American and Jewish too, you know, as much as we want to say that there's a separation between, you know, state and religion, it's very much insinuated when it's mentioned, God and, you know, in all of these things that it's, you know, it's, very Christian. You know, you find yourself in that predicament, and I applaud him having the grit and the sentiment that he has on this.
Absolutely. Thank you. And would you mind reading the next one, please, Dexter?
Absolutely. Okay. This is Scraps and Scribbles, 1988. I was tiny, little chestnut-headed boy, all fear, fantasy, and freckles. Mom and Dad had a caravan. On it, where the dog slept, by the blue chemical toilet, silver toaster, and with doors for bread. Not slots, travel telly. Watch Attenborough, fascinated by leaf cutter ants. Permanent gentle haze of toast and marmalade, bacon, and calor gas. My jobs help mom change the cylinders, fetch water from the outside tap, walk the dogs with Dad, and my quarrelsome sister. Older and mean. Pond nearby went fishing with Dad, and quarrelsome sister, she caught an eel, squealed, when Dad tried to hand it to her. Got my thumb stuck in one of those damn folding chairs. I turned to squeal. They hadn't noticed and were leaving. I thought I was lost. I cried and shouted. They didn't hear. End of world. The stranger heard. Fetch Dad. Prickling beard kiss. Cuddle. All better in his arms. In 1988. End poem.
Beautiful read, Dexter. And I loved it. I mean, you know, it was a retelling of a story of feeling forgotten and abandoned, and then having that essence taken away and replaced with your dad hugging and throwing a kiss on you. And I thought it was just a beautiful, beautiful presentation of the love between a father and a son. So just a great rite. Lauren, what did you think?
It was a great read and a great poem, really. It's presented in the beginning. In 1988, I was tiny, little chestnut-headed boy. It's a very simple opening, but it tells you exactly where and when. And the caravan is the kind of vehicle that I think most English people have. I believe this is, I believe Scraps and Scribbles comes from Great Britain. They go on the long weekends with it. There's quite a few car programs that describe the caravan. And then they'll just find a place and set up shop, so to speak, and spend the day or spend the afternoon. And so when I'm reading this, it just rings absolutely true, because I've seen videos on that subject. And I like the fact that he mentions the boy was interested in leafcutter ants and remembers the toast and marmalade and bacon as permanent gentle haze, and the tower gas, I think, are the little cylinders they use to heat the food. Just a charming little piece and a memory of pain and yet love. Prickly beer kiss, cuddle, all better in his big arms. 1988. You know, he ends with a beginning, which is a nice technique. I really like this.
Absolutely. Excellent comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Dexter, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this one, and I also really connected with it because, oddly enough, I was born in 1988. I just connect with it because it's kind of like we're kind of the final age that I think grew up that can remember a time before technology, and I think that that's just what kind of really stands out here is that there's simple things, you know, going fishing and going walks with the dogs and there isn't really one mention of TV and things like that. We didn't have cable when I was growing up, and it was before the internet. You know, it did come on when I was like in middle school and high school and things like that, but this one really kind of just hit home with me because other than the quarrelsome sister, I am an only child, but it is kind of the last of the Mohicans, I guess, of an era before technology hit, and I just think that it was a great write.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. Awesome, awesome. Okay, Lawrence, would you mind reading the next poem?
Certainly. Let's see. What do we have? Doc, where are you when I need you? Was it really so many years ago, Doc? You came to my house, sat on the floor with me, and we played with my Lionel train set, just like two good friends. Is it really so many years later now? Degenerative, arthritic knees, hips, spine, wrists, and now that stupid, uncharacteristic blubbering last night, watching Hacksaw Ridge. You would have watched with me, and told me it's a sad, happy movie. Not to worry. Empathy is good. And that the things I'm forgetting every day are nothing to worry about. It happens to everybody. Who needs a steel-trapped mind, anyway? You would have reassured me about getting crammed into that tight tube later today, so they can get better images of the rotting back the spine surgeon rolled his dead eyes about. But you were my friend many years ago, and you're not there anymore, are you? There's no one there, and it's so hard for a man to ask for help. headphone.
Beautiful read, Lauren. And that was a powerful poem on that subject of getting old and losing memories and, you know, all the situational happenings of getting old and having to be x-rayed and committed by doctors and stuff. And you just want to connect to the doctor of your childhood, which is a fascinating thought. You know, that doctor obviously had a big influence on his life and in at the end of his life as well. So just a wonderful read and an excellent write. Dexter, what did you think?
You know, what I take this as is the loss that's happened over time of just people that are going to put it to you straight sometimes. It reminds me of a song by Warren Zevon called My Shit's Effed Up. And it's like, you know, sometimes it's almost like, you know, you're just looking for somebody to go, yeah, that is messed up, or, yep, you know, you screwed up, or whatever it is that you got to deal with this. You got to get up off the ground. And I know that that's not, and I think that that's what this writes about, is that that's not, like, technically happening, but it, sometimes you wonder if it's, like, sometimes the more that people are open and delving into my emotions and things, which I do think is, you know, healthy. Sometimes you think that, you know, am I playing into this too much, or I just need somebody to tell me to get off my ass and work out. That's the fact. You know, you can sit there and go, well, you got anxiety or depression. Get off your ass and go to the gym or something. You know what I mean? And so I just think that this is the death of a time where people just put it to you straight. Very well done.
Absolutely. Very insightful comment. And, Lawrence, what are your thoughts?
This is another one of those poems that are uncomfortably relatable. Dexter, how old are you, by the way?
I am only 33.
Well, I was born in 1988.
All right,
I'm an
33.
Old soul, kind
of. Well, I mean, I got news for you, Dexter. After the age of 45, you're never truly comfortable again. All right? Once you're 45 years old, everything is going to start hurting regardless. So just beware of that. All right?
Well, hopefully we still share the phone conversation and a poem at that point. Well, and I'll say,
Ron, you were exactly right. No, he does, the poet does an exceptional job by being, by speaking to a person who's no longer there, a person who has passed, as if he were there. It's a very effective technique emotionally, because you begin to wonder about a doctor who sat with him when he was a child. For he is an old man, surely the doctor is dead. And we find out, of course, that he is dead. But the last line, really, is no one there. And it's so hard for a man to ask for help. I can see that. It rings very, very true, especially for men of a certain generation. Different for, I think, today's youth. But for some guys, to ask for help is to admit defeat, something they'll never do. So this is a great piece.
Absolutely. Excellent comment, Lauren. Thank you. And I'd like to welcome Lee Wildove to the show. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Gray. Hey, Lauren. Hey, Dexter.
Hey, Louie.
Hey, Louie.
I'm happy to hang out with all these men. I'm a lucky girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. We needed a change of perspective. We've probably been wrong on our takes on all night, so we needed a change of perspective.
No. You know, what I like about that poem is that, you know, sometimes when you go get tests, they just run you through like cattle. And I was looking at that picture he put up, and it did make me think that I needed to go get lunch. But on the side of the patient, you know, sometimes, you know, when things start falling apart, and, you know, you don't have to be 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. Everybody ages differently. And depending what our lifestyle was and how hard it was determines how much you're going to suffer when you get older. And you would like to somebody to talk to. It's not that you're bitching. It's just that you just would like somebody to listen. So, you know, just mirror your thoughts. And when they're able to do that, you give them a kiss and a hug. And though it can't fix the problem, it does make you feel better.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lee. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lee, I have the next poem up. It's by Blues Man, if you wouldn't mind, please. I'll repost it.
Okay. Nostalgic Remembrance by Blues Man. I remember my Mexican dirt weed that I regularly smoked as a kid. Is that the one I'm supposed to be reading?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Excuse me. Let me start again. I'm sorry. Nostalgic Remembrance. I remember my Mexican dirt weed that I regularly smoked as a kid before the birth of death metal or vicious kink punk, Ming said. $50 a quarter pound, I would pack my corn cob pipe. Then I top it off with hash oil until I was baked and fully ripe. For $5 more, a quarter ounce, Jamaican weed had made the scene, and it made me completely happy, as Mexican dirt weed made me mean. Then Colombian red bud and gold bud had slowly opened my bloodshot eyes to the state of approaching virtual nirvana, and failure to launch became my demise. THC, CBC, from a God, a most precious gift, has always been missing salt in the soup to give your heart and soul a lift. You're smoking the wrong crap.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I thought it was a wonderful, you know, nostalgic write on his remembrance of being a kid smoking Mexican dirt weed and how it made him mean, and then Colombian or Jamaican came along and made him happy. And then Colombian red bud and gold bud slowly opened his bloodshot eyes to a state approaching virtual nirvana, and failure to the launch became his demise. Too busy getting high. Fantastic, right? Excellent read, Lee. Lauren, what did you think?
It's a very nostalgic piece for me. I do remember that Mexican dirt weed. That was just this dark brown crap that, you know, oh, man, really? But, you know, you had what you had. That was it. $50 a quarter pound. That's awful expensive for that stuff. But, yeah, the better the weed, the better the high, the better the launch. To give your heart and soul a needed lift. When I first went out into the world, into the Navy and went to a lot of countries, I did find it a very common theme. Every country has their version of something to smoke to get high. It's everywhere. It is ubiquitous. In some places, religion has reared its ugly head, doesn't allow it, etc. But I'll tell you what, since time immemorial, and here we are, 2022, we're still singing its praises. I love this piece.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Laura. Thank you. And Dexter, what did you think?
You know, I thought that this was fantastic. I guess, you know, I don't know if these kids will ever know the struggle of trying to clean out all of those little black seeds out of just a corner hunk of looking weed, you know. And you know what's funny too is that, you know, I think that even the, you know, working in a school now, and looking at everything the way in the lens of today, even weed is gotten more PC, because it's like funny that it's like, you know, you sort of associate the Mexican dirt weed. You know, I think that even if you said that today to today's kids, they'd go, oh, that's messed up, man. How are you going to just associate Mexican weed with dirt weed or whatever? You know, everything is just so changed now. I just think that this is a fantastic write and a very nostalgic piece.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. And Lee, what did you think?
Yeah, you know what? This was just fun. We never called it Mexican dirt weed. You know, we called it what everybody else did, marijuana. You know, and you would go under the school bleachers and, you know, pass it around. They would pass it around. And because there was a street that was outside the school, and they used to call it, it had a bad reputation. But anyways, us smart kids would go, well, at least we thought we were smart, would go under the bleachers, and then, you know, of course, at that time, you can't get strong. We didn't get strong liquor, but, you know, the Strawberry Boone and the MD-4040. And, you know, this brought back a lot of memories. Nobody ever got mean with the pot that, you know, that we could see, but some people who drank, like one of my friends, he turned into a beast. He was mean, really mean. So this brought back a lot of happy memories for me. And, you know, I enjoyed it because you just reminisce about the past. And, you know, it's not like we do this every day, but, oh, well, I had fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. Great comment, Lena. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got the next poem up. This is by Anton Ansberg, 37, and it's called A Picture Paints How Many Words? You come into my studio with your terroristic sneer, start talking about your own petty troubles while I fling paint futilely at the woes of the world. I glance over at you. You are looking at a woman we both know. I decide it's time for a break. Flop down on the nearest chair. You offer me a cigarette, forgetting I never smoked. I offer you a scotch, fully aware it could kill you. After a few words, you trudge down the stairs, saying, same time tomorrow? Of course. And then his author's notes, he says, well, none of the actions are true, all of the feelings are. And I like it. I mean, you know, it shows a relationship that is kind of a love-hate relationship in that, you know, somebody walks in with a sneer and starts talking about their own petty troubles. And then he flings paint futilely at the woes of the world. And then they leave saying, same time tomorrow, of course. So, yeah, just an excellent write with fantastic situation there between two people. So I thought it was well done. And what did you think, Lawrence?
The world is filled with odd relationships. This seems to be one of them. I decided it's time for a break. Flop down on the nearest chair. You offer me a cigarette, forgetting I never smoked. I offer you a scotch, fully aware it could kill you. And it's some animus there. I like the piece.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Dexter, what did you think?
I think what's nostalgic about this is the idea or thought that, you know, you used to get acquainted over a drink. You used to get acquainted over a smoke. I think that if you used to get offered a scotch or a smoke and you said no, you would have been looked at a certain way. And now with, you know, society's change of views on addiction and substance abuse, it's not that way. You know, you definitely wouldn't have been accepted into the group had you turned down a drink. You know, and so I just thought that this was a very, very good piece about nostalgia.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Louie, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, for me, you know, he says that that these are feelings, okay? And he's talking about a friendship. But to me, this is, it's like they've lost the deepness of the friendship because sometimes as life goes on and things happen in our life and we really get to know the other person, we're not that attracted to them anymore. But you've been friends for so long that you just barely do anything. You know, they both know each other. He's, you know, he's he's looking at women, which means that he's probably a womanizer. And he just sits there. He hasn't changed. He sits in a chair. And, of course, the guy being, a smoker, you know, it's only polite to ask, but, you know, you don't keep asking somebody you know their personality. And maybe he doesn't really care about him, but he says, I offer you a scotch fully where it could kill you, so I don't know what the person is suffering from. But they just talk a little bit, check on each other. The deepness is not there anymore, and off he goes down tomorrow, and they just it's just a pattern that's repeated but has thinned out like a shirt that you like so much and you wore it so much that it's finally thinning out and you can't wear it anymore.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lisa. Thank you. Okay, Dexter, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. Let me get this reset. Okay, this is Gary Adcock, 1969. Today I arouse to find myself in 1969, poster hung above an old familiar peace sign. My core visibly shaken, not sure what to do. For I had gone to bed to the year 2022. Stumbling to my feet in search of the nearest mirror, rubbing sleepy eyes in an image slowly became clearer. A young man with long blonde hair stood in front of me. Image of my younger self, face smooth and wrinkle-free. Paper-thin walls in my apartment let me hear next door. CCR playing loudly, echoing their beliefs of anti-war. Began to look around, neon posters strung everywhere. Most portrayed young hippies with flower, lace, long hair. My mind had taken me on a journey to my better days. Times of life where withered flowers turned to bright bouquets. My aging heart knows one can't truly go back to the past. Soon I'll wake to reality. Losing fond memories, I amassed. End poem.
Beautiful read, Dexter. And I liked it. You know, it's a fascinating dream state that he's in. You know, looking at himself in the mirror with all these posters and CCR playing loudly, echoing their beliefs of anti-war. And then, you know, he knows his mind is taking him back to a journey of his better days. A time where withered flowers turn to bright bouquets. His aging heart knows he can't truly go back to the past. Soon he'll wake to reality, losing fond memories amassed. Just a beautiful poem on the subject of remembrance. What are your thoughts for it?
I like the details of this. Brings you right back to 1969 style, protest, music, everything that we remember about 69. And you know, you can go back there in a dream state if you're lucky, but then unfortunately one has to wake up and realize that it's all a dream, and what was and what is now is. But I don't want to say it's incredibly poignant, but it is. Soon I'll wake to reality, losing fond memories, I am at. There's a melancholy there, I think. And well done. Well done.
Great comment, Lawrence. Thank you. And Dexter, what did you think? Oops, sorry. Louis.
Dexter? Did you comment? Did you want Dexter to comment or me to comment?
He read. You comment.
You know, this was a fantastic poem. I enjoyed it a lot. You know, there's still so much history and pictures of the past during those years where love was everything and, you know, peace and anti-war. And, you know there was protests in so many cities and in colleges. Of course, you know, that type of stuff going back then, You know, a lot of them got arrested by the police. You know, and the music is still fantastic. And, you know, sometimes when we journey back, we can journey back to good memories, but there was always issues, you know, even if you were 18 or 16, you know, there's, you know, we still had to deal with the daily troubles that were going on in our lives as we were going. And, you know, to, you know, you do miss your younger years, you know, because you used to, I remember jumping out of bed. Now I just like hit the alarm clock and take another 5 minutes snooze. I don't want to get up. I love this poem.
Great comment, Lou. Thank you. And Dexter, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think that, you know, they might say that, you know, the men from the 30s is the greatest generation. You know, they quote-unquote, they call it. But the youth from the 60s and early 70s leading into kind of Vietnam and all of that was very legendary in its own right. There's not very much old slang still used, you know. I mean, being stoned, hip, you know, all of the, you know, there's just so much culture that was cultivated during that time. And so whether you relate to that time period or not, as far as being, having lived it, it still is a very important piece cultural-wise because of the impact that that time period had. So very well done.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. Okay, Lawrence, I have your piece up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Thank you. I had written to Open Poetry without really realizing what the theme was. I can replace this very quickly with another poem that would fit, that might fit better. I mean, if it bothers
sure.
you that this
you
is...
Want. Gonna, yeah, if you want. Sure.
Oh.
All right,
well,
so
I didn't either, so.
Oh, all right, I'll tell you what. I'll just stick with it. I'll keep Lou you company.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. All right. Just an attempt at a little humor. This is called Two Profs in a Bar. Two invitingly bosomed madame sat exchanging lives on a slow evening over cigarettes and booze. Hit on by two dwarvish, bookish blokes with knit jackets, eyes narrowed and eager. Both sides brightened with a moment, each with their own agenda. Calculations fly, libidos are high. Barkeep kept busy, boys kept buying. Madame liked only the best. Around and round and round, with ashes as tablecloth. Great for drunken doodling. Arcane mysteries are fingered, then explored. Philosophies of long standing, debated and pursued. The boys chafe under the burden of elastic minutes, finally articulating with a certain drunken flair their modest proposal for the evening. The girls smile, as they know, you know. Time to bait the hook with an immodest proposal for cash. Two angels fresh from the heavenly domains could not have looked more shocked at the mention of cash. Just a good time, an intimate soiree among sophisticates, a free exchange of sensibilities twixt the sheets, they propounded, accented with a round of vulgar, spittle-laden frothing of protest at the lady's refusal that served no purpose. Hustled to the curb for being rude and obnoxious in a rude and obnoxious dive bar and flung to the gutter. Damn it, George. We've been fleeced. All our cash on booze, mourned one. I was anticipating a movable feast. That redhead had me completely undone. Should have spun him a rhyme, old boy. Praise their sweet virginity. Courting is standard and practices. One of them addresses femininity. Neither was Helen or close to Aphrodite. Thought it'd be easy for Zeus's sake. Yeah, you're no god, nor are you mighty. Just a mortal with a bad case of sackache. Off they wandered in high dudgeon, belaboring the issue, moralizing about the importance of empirical experiences as prophets do. And
excellent, right?
Oh, Laurent, I do love your sense of dark humor.
You did a fabulous job presenting the storyline of this encounter between these men and these women in this dive bar that, you know, the women drank these men out of their money and left them at the curb. So I thought it was just a fantastic telling of a beautiful storyline. And what did you think, Dexter?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic piece. Extremely, funny, you know, but, you know, it tells such a classic tale, mentioning cash, you know, the, them getting them out of their money. You know, what's funny is that it's like, you can see where this is going from the outside. But you can also see where these guys are lost in the moment from the inside, sadly. And they don't pick up on it, you know. And like how you put here, where is it, about the libidos are high. But the just a mortal with a bad case of sackache. That broke me into complete laughter right there. This is a very humorous piece, Laurent, and very well written. So congratulations on this piece.
Thank you.
Great job, Laurent. And Louie, what did you think?
Well, I disagree with you, Gray, because you know what? They voluntarily were looking for something to sleep with when they went in that bar, and they were looking for women. And of course, they found some beautiful ones with big breasts. And, you know, of course they come over and the women, you know, not being stupid, are eyeing them like, what was it that he said here? You know, I don't see it, but eyes narrowed and eager, okay? They knew what they were looking for. I mean, it's so damn obvious. And, you know, and then it says, you know, and then it's, you know, of course it says, you know, they go over and start talking to them. And obviously there was, they liked each other because the libidos were kicking in. But then the idiots, thinking that they could just pay for their drinks and get a piece of ass or pay for their drinks, thinking that as a payment, and I have seen this. I have seen where people have gone out and because they pay for your food or your drinks, they think they're deserving to have your pants pulled off. But obviously, you know, they just kept the drinks coming. You know, they kept the drinks coming, and, you know, who's stupid here? Who's the stupid idiot here? Okay?
Yeah.
And I love this stanza. Neither as Helen or close to Aphrodite thought they'd be easy. There you go. That Lawrence said it. For Zeus' sake. Ha! You're no god, no are you mighty, just a mortal with a bad case of that. And, you know, and so in the end, they ended up telling them how they felt. And, oh, well, you know, that's what you get.
Yeah.
You're too wise about this whole thing.
Huh?
You're way too wise about this whole thing.
Oh, because I've had experience.
Oh.
No can do, Exter.
Would you like to say anything about your poem?
I started this a long time ago, like months ago, and it kind of sat, and I'd go in and I'd change it a little bit and then get back to it, change it a little bit, and throw stanza out, put a stanza in. I've never spent so much damn time on a poem, but it turned out all right.
Well, a listen to all the horny fools.
No.
That's a pretty broad statement. I mean, that kind of classifies us all in some aspect. No,
I'm just kidding. And you know, it works both ways. It's not just female to male. It can be female to female or male to male or, you know, female to male. It's a lesson for all people who think, you know, think they can get away with that.
The science fiction author Robert Heinlein once said there ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Right.
Exactly.
All right, Lou, your piece is up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, okay, hold on. I got to refresh because it never puts up the new poem you put in. Okay, well, I went like way back to nostalgic memories. So here we go. Blood amulet. The darkness here will slowly kill me. It creeps and weighs upon me. Is full of Bell C. Aiken. Sun's dragon eye. Imperial citrine topaz. Infused blood amulet. Hourglass silvered, heated drapes at sacrifice of a lonesome swan neck. Yet the star burns, midnight soulful, Nile's hours, forbidden command while you lay draped in inlet jewels, golden feathers entombed at death's temple, your loved place, bells of the guardian, Anubis. Upon the breast where our children suckled. Sand drifts forming dunes of an elegy's birth as the people of my blood crumble upon the wind when tomorrow never comes. So you may hear each tormented sandal footstep bestowing your magical powers, a living treasure of haunted agony. Nightly drowning in pomegranate wine, hearing every move and bell chime as you transfer your powers, your specter-seeing eyes over me. Screeches, entombed upon the breeze, sacrificed inside the gilded monument betrothed. Your voice vibrates. It chimes its nightly hymn. As your nails etch, jackal fingertips roll, bluebell cups as burning shadows, lips tend my skin, and hieroglyphics in poem.
Beautiful read, Lee. And I love the poem. You know, this was a collab between you and myself, and I think I only have a couple of stanzas in there, but yours are just beautiful. You know, the imagery is fantastic, and you can feel the emotion welling up in each stanza. So just a brilliant read and a fantastic write, Lee.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And, Lauren, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm hugely impressed. I didn't see that it was a collab, but this has got to be one of the better ones that I've heard, certainly recently. I love the imagery of Anubis. The way you've written this, the sun's dragon eye, imperial citrine topaz, infused blood amulet, hourglass, silver deed. I mean, that's wonderful phrasing. But I do think the one I like the best is that so you may hear each tormented sandal footstep, bestowing your magical powers, a living treasure of haunted agony, nightly drowning in pomegranate wine, hearing every moving bell chime as you transfer your powers to specters, seeing eyes over me. That is powerful stuff, my dear. This is a terrific piece.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren.
Great comment. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Dexter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic piece, Luyu. And, you know, what it kind of reminded me of, and where I think it ties to the night, or I guess maybe there isn't ever an age limit on being in this kind of relationship, but it kind of feels to me like that relationship that's so passionate and charged, but you just know is bad for you. You know, you're being almost kind of trapped within that relationship. And I guess we all hope that we're past that, but I guess that there's never a limit on that. But it just, tormented sandals, footsteps. There's something very spiritual about this piece. And it just feels like two spirits that connected in the wrong time and in the wrong way. That were maybe meant for each other in a way. But it's just an incredible piece that I just find, like, yeah, very spiritually connecting, you know, in a dark way. So very well done.
Thank
Excellent
you,
comment.
Dexter. Thank you, Laurent.
And would you like to say anything about the poem, Lee?
No, and tell my muse secrets? Shame.
You're funny. Okay, so I've got the next poem up. This is by Weaver of Dreams, and she has a SoundCloud.
Ooh. Oh, I love her voice.
I can tame your inner wolf. I'll pacify your rampant id. Drop the sad you wear. Be the man you meant to be. Seduction will satisfy the hunger you've kept hidden. You're in my hands. Let me use my body to set you free. Come with me to a place that's secluded and quiet. Silvery moonlight will bathe us in a flattering glow. My gentle hands will spread fragrant oils to arouse. When I feel your body respond, I'll drop the pace to slow. Pleasure is the precious element I give. Nothing is rushed. I draw it out to the point where it becomes almost too much. When your muscles are quivering with the need for release, only then will my soft, pliant body move open to your touch. Now, my untamable wolf, did my prediction come true? Is it in balance with ego? And does superego agree? Take a deep breath, inhale my essence, then remember, my lips, tongue, and supple hands are yours. So call me.
Well, beautiful read and write. You know, it's such a captivating and passionate poem filled with incredible imagery, and you can feel the power of the emotions as you read through this. I really like the title of it, too, as well, Temptation. You know, what's more intoxicating than temptation? It can take over your soul if you let it. And you know, just a brilliant poem. What are your thoughts, Lori?
Oh, heck, I'm dialing as we speak. Are you kidding? Here we have a woman who is going to set out to tame the inner beast. And she tells her man to drop your mask. Be the man you want to be. use me as a sacrifice, if you will. Use me to transcend the place you're in right now and set you free. Be who you want to be. That's a hell of an offering. To have the skill to draw out of a person something that is perhaps kept repressed. Someone who has not known the kind of release that a strong sexual, spiritual experience can have. And yeah, my lips, tongue, and supple hands are yours. So call me. I'm a diamond. Great piece.
Absolutely. Well said, Lauren. Thank you. And Dexter, what did you think?
You know, I think that this is such a piece, and you know, in society, there's always been, you know, kind of always subtly been such a focus on maybe experience or body count and stuff. This is there's nothing like the experience of two experienced lovers, and this just has it all intertwined. You know, nothing is rushed. I think that line just really keys on the point where being calm into this really allows you to relax and take this piece in, and just the listener was able to sit front row at this. So I just thought that this was incredible. Very well done, and I love her voice also.
Absolutely. Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think this is one of the most sensual, seductive, mouth-watering poems that she has penned. I love this poem. She did it on a dare. You know, sometimes you can see in somebody's eyes that sexual beast that's just boiling. And I'm not talking about somebody who, you know, goes out and sleeps with Mary Jo, Martha, and Becky. You know, this is something where she's targeting the wolf who usually is targeting, but she understands its hunger. She talks about my gentle hands will spread fragrant oils to arouse, you know, that she can give pleasure's element. Oh, and this line, when your muscles are quivering with a need for your release, you know, she's telling him, I am in some ways your sacrifice, your answer to that deep hunger you have. And then she says, at the end, take a deep breath, inhale my essence, then remember the hunger that she has to match his, and my lips, tongue, and subtle hands are yours, so call me. God, that's freaking sexy. Loved it.
Great comment, Lou. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is by Kaiku, and it's called Home. 1. I knew a little about my late father. He did not wish to relive his past. Once I asked him about the war and this diaspora, there was deep anguish in his voice. Though he told me a few recollected stories then, out of my naive curiosity, I dared not to ask again. For his homeland was but a fugacious contour. He prayed I'd be able to befriend my own shadows. 2. There was a song my mother once sung, stitched in between the arduous housework and gardening, about a village sheltered by green banyan trees, how the thatched roofs houses sank beneath the misty horizon. Like a child would, I sang joyfully, unconsciously. My mother smiling, she asked me if I understood the lyrics that I sang with my silver tongue for its fluency. now echoes in the resonant pockets of my aching bones. End poem. And then in her author's note, she says, dedicated to my mother and late father who expressed their love in different ways. My dad fought in the war and held all the pain to himself, where my mom would express it through song, singing of her lost homeland. This is probably one of the longest poems I've published on AP, and it's also the most autobiographical. So I hold this poem dearly to my heart. This poem is about growing up and understanding my parents, wishing somehow I understood sooner. And that was a beautiful presentation of remembered youth and the anguish and the pain that, you know, your parents held within them, and yet the mother would sing as the father, you know, clammed himself up. But, you know, it's just a deeply poignant storyline. What did you think, Lawrence?
I think that we all come to that point where we realize that what we had understood about our parents when we were young was far different from what we could have or should have understood and now understand these many years later. The line, its fluency now echoes in the resonant pockets of my aching bones, the wonderful way of recalling his childhood. It's so skillfully phrased. It's metaphorical, it's biographical, and I really admire the use of the word fugacious. The vaguest idea what that means, but I do know that I like this piece.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Dexter, what did you think?
You know, what stands out about this, I think, is, I love what Laurent had to say about the different understanding that we have of our parents, but, you know, on top of that, too, it's just you kind of gain an understanding. There's so many different people that served in wars and different battles that really kind of go unrecognized, and not that that, like, would change any people that have been in combat's whole outlook or anything like that. But there's a lot of people that come here as Somalian refugees that escaped war, and different people that come here maybe as Vietnamese that had fought in that war and come here and don't really, you know, for as little as we really do for our troops and remembrance, it's still, at least in this country, and, you know, and people are somewhat, you know, remembered. There's a lot of people that fought, and that is going to go unrecognized and unrespected and unheard about or whatever for eternity or whatever, you know, fought maybe in a losing battle. I just think that this is just a very strong piece about the struggles and the trials and tribulations that previous generations have had to overcome.
Absolutely. Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. And Lou Wildov, what did you think?
You know, this poem is very personal. And, you know, from the 40s to the year, 1940s to year 2000, you know, it wasn't popular to discuss your feelings and share them. You know, most of the time you had to bend and bear it. And, you know, it was a different time back then. You know, our parents really, as we were children, okay, I'm not talking about as young adults and 20s, 30s, and 40s, okay, because conversations change and you want more detail. You know, they didn't talk about what happened in their lives. You know, my dad was in Vietnam, and they didn't talk about it. And in fact, everybody, because I grew up in a military town, nobody talked about it. We just knew that they were in Nam. and the other wars that were going on. And, you know, it was just something that was not discussed. And I remember my mother, she would do the same thing. She would sing in the kitchen, and I would see tears rolling down her eyes. I would see her gardening, and she would water her flowers and everything with her tears. And I knew my mom was suffering too, but like I said, they did not. It was not a discussion that was at the table or even in private, really. It didn't come until, like, I would say, like, the 2000, where depression and PTSD, even with the soldiers. I mean, they suffered a lot, and, you know, they were just supposed to buck it up, you know, be a man. And, you know, and I and the family just had to just deal with it in different circumstances. And as a child, you can remember the pain, you know, the distance. You can also remember what your mother went through, and until we got older, do we understand? Like they say, if you haven't walked in my moccasins, you don't understand. And when I started working with veterans at the VA hospital, then I started understanding. You know, it's many of my friends, their fathers screamed at night. They had issues with Agent Orange. It was a different time. And now we can talk about it, and how sad we didn't get to share, or not that we could have done anything, but to show love and humility and concern for these men and women who have gone through war-torn countries and have fought at the wars, all the various wars.
Absolutely. Brilliant comment, Leah. Thank you for sharing. Okay, Dexter, I have your piece up next, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Okay, this is A Day at Grandma's. Shades of fuchsia, flamingo pink, soft white and a tender yellow hue. Mm. Standing out of a forest of green abyss, peonies in my grandma's backyard were as warm as her afghans, like a slice of tomato with a little salt, ripe in the depths of my fondest memories. Take a scissors, cut some from my vase. I studied the vase in a glance for height, carefully snipped as ants scurried like midnight in downtown Chicago at noon on the stems of each bush. Acquaintance with my own system, steadily cutting, and to the grass it fell. Like a frightened baby's clenched hand, tight, unbloomed peony bulb, cut down. Pontius Pilate instead began blooming inside of my gut as I scolded myself, transporting it and feeling low. Grandma, without seconds hesitation, slipped it right into the vase, plunged, the rest like an Olympic diving team. But I saw you accidentally cut it. They still bloom in a vase with some sun. I often forget that lesson, unfortunately. From the bludgeoning of life, all its force, I am that cut peony, snipped too early, but not dead. Just need a little sun. End poem.
Excellent job. A beautiful read, Dex, and a fantastic poem. You know, the lessons that we learn in life are very prevalent sometimes, and at this moment, this was one of yours, you know, cutting it accidentally, and then, you know, your mother saying it will bloom in the vase with some sun, you know. And then I really liked your ending. It was very deeply felt. I often forget that lesson, unfortunately, from the bludgeoning of life, all of its force. I am that cut peony, snipped too early, but not dead, just need a little sun. And then this is based on a quote. I've had so many knives stuck in me. When they hand me a flower, I can't quite make out what it is. It takes time, by Charles Bukowski. So just an excellent job on the prompt and a beautiful storytelling as well. Lauren, what are your thoughts?
Well, I thought the metaphor utilized of the cut peony, a snip too early, not dead, just needing sun, is an apt metaphor. I think we would all bloom a little better with more sun. So many never see that sun, feel its warmth, and as a result, never achieve as much as I might have to find the happiness we all seek. Great piece, Dex.
Thank you, Laura.
Absolutely. And Liu, what did you think?
I love the Ray Dexter, and not only that, I love the poem. You know, it brings back so many memories because I stayed a lot with my Nana and her gardening and cooking, crocheting that Afghan got me, and the tomato sandwiches with cheese and salt, oh, to die for. You know, and, you know, the thing is that when we spend time with them, you know, we watch them go through the day, what they did, you know, because they were always taking care of us and even taking care of their older family members, like their mother, you know, like her son and daughter, which would be your mom and dad, you know, and, you know, because of this soft tenderness of how you described her, you know, I could see your grandma, I could see my grandmother. And, you know, sometimes we didn't do something, you know, right, or we would try to hide it, you know. You know, like me pulling on the ball of string that while she was making it Afghan and unraveled the entire thing. You know, kids, yep. This is something that kids do. Okay, well, we're kids. And yep. Sometimes we do things without realizing, because we're kids, the effect that it's going to have. You know, and when my grandma just thought, she looked at me, because, you know, when you're in trouble and they look at you like in the old days, you know, she was, but then, you know, I guess tears started, well, you know, I felt the tears welling up in my eye, and she saw that I didn't do it on purpose. I was just being a child. See, and that they can understand, because they have already raised their children. And, grandchildren tend to be super special to grandparents. And it's okay. She says, it's all right. I can fix it. And she started knitting again. And she told me to hold the ball. And I let the string go as she was re-knitting what I had taken apart. You know, and, it, you know, this is just a lesson for us. Sometimes when we do things wrong, it's not done intentionally. It's not done intentionally. But when the other person shows love and forgiveness for whatever thing we've done, whether it be big or small, it makes a big impact on us. And as adults, sometimes when we do things wrong, we need that little bit of loving sunshine, you know, to keep moving forward. And whoever it is, letting us know it's okay. Support. Support is important. Because it's a gift we hand down to the next generation.
Yeah, great comment, Lou. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't even remember if it really truly did bloom a peony or not. I just remember anything that was cut short, tomato, flower, whatever. Her method was just put it in the sun out on the porch. You know, it was just like, see what happens, I guess. So thank you, Lou.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you like to say anything about your poem, Dexter?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I just think that I spent a lot of time with my grandma, too. I lived with her for a period of time, and multiple periods of time. So she's just very fond of my memory. She was hard as nails. But, you know, there was also...
my grandma.
Yep. But there was also times where... you know, you could run to her, too. So, anyway, I just love
yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. An excellent share. Thank you, Dexter. Okay, I've got the next poem up. This is by Frank, a.k.a. Poetic Picasso,
ooh.
And it's called A Place. Okay, so I'm going to play his SoundCloud.
Okay.
A
Love was once a beautiful dream, but it is now just a bitter reminder of the haunting silence for a man listening to the old sorrow of his broken heart. A love so powerful, yet too distant and so unattainable in the simplicity of time, but not to the moments when love is the thought for the composition of two lovers' chess. The night's splendor is seen by the naked eye, witnessing afterwards the colorful shades of life and scenery breathed into the world of the imagination and the darkness. A place uniquely where time remains the same, and love is the pure essence of their innocence, and what can be told is held in the brilliance of a masterpiece. The harmonic chords of a melody accompany the sounds of the beauty of a sentimental promenade that only the composer knows from memory as he plays the notes of his nostalgia. A nostalgia of love when the heart is fragile and the gloom is present, and the weary days and long evenings burdening him as he stares at the moon and the lonely sky above. A place where his soul somewhere is awakened by the resounding music, and the spry nightingales are inspired to sing like a nightly choir in the dispersion of the moonlight. The moonlight reaching the diapason of a piano striking the illuminated keys from the gentle finger of an artist whose art has no sense of rule, but its creation. Illuminated keys from the gentle finger of an artist whose art has no sense of rule, but its creation.
Beautiful read and a fantastic poem.
Very touching.
Very touching poem. You can feel the melancholy in the lines and the distance, and but you know, I really like the harmonic chords of a melody accompanied the sounds of a beauty of sentimental promenade that only the composer knows from memory as he plays the notes of his nostalgia, a nostalgia of love when the heart is fragile and the gloom is present with weary days and long evenings burdening him as he stares at the moon and the lonely sky above. Just haunting imagery. Beautiful, right? And I thought it was a powerful presentation of art in its purest form, and that's creation. So just a wonderful job. Laurent, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was a great poem about a place created by love, for it is love's art that makes the rules and creates the place, accompanied by that music written in notes of his nostalgia. Wonderful writing.
Excellent comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Dexter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I bounce back and forth oftentimes between just listening and reading, and then sometimes reading and listening to when Frank writes. You know, I think that there's something to be said about his SoundClouds as far as being just kind of an experience, and I thought that this was a fantastic one. So very well done.
Great comment. Thank you. And Louie, what are your thoughts?
You know, this is a beautiful poem. It's, you know, when I reread something for the second time, it changes and shifts into different imagery in my mind. And, you know, it is true when you have been involved with somebody and they're so far away, you know, like you said, and so unattainable, you know, you know, him using the song by Debussy was just a perfect match to this poem. You know, and when you look into the world and, you know, whatever moment inspires those memories, you know, the music, whether it's a scent or whether it's the full moon, you know, the nostalgia of love, when the heart is fragile and the gloom is present, you know, because we are all people, even though we look solid, our heart isn't, you know, and our memories aren't either. We can travel backwards into time and relive all these moments that we remember that we had with this person. And right here, this beautiful says, where he goes, a moonlight reaching thy passant, I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly, of a piano striking the illuminated keys. You know, you can see that from the gentle fingers of the artist. You can literally feel the artist's fingers in each of these stanzas, and you relive the art and the creation and whatever it is that we added to it. I thought this was beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Leah. Okay, Lawrence, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. Okay. Whatever happened to Susan Day? By Dark Night of the Soul. Whatever happened to Susan Day? An innocent day has gone by, with Mr. Softy's ice cream truck on Friday nights, playing red light, green light in the front yard. Whatever happened to the $6 million man and backyard fantasies? July at Fantasy Island, August at the Erie County Fair. The days are gone, yet still remain a vital part, a link to chain past to present in memory. A living personal history. Whatever happened to Kolchak, the night stalker, and apple trees blooming in springtime, with a house full of cats and dogs, six in all, and buffalo blizzards leaving snow 3 feet high. Whatever happened to Carol Burnett, and bunk beds with my sister in the corner room, with an earless stuffed bear, Teddy Jean, and best friends named Louie and Stan. Some things stay locked inside the mind to be recalled at special times, to be able to cherish and hold near all that once was very dear. Whatever happened to the incredible Mr. Limpet and the old shows on Channel 13 and Granny frying scrapple for Sunday brunch and Vinyl Pop by McCartney and Wings? Whatever happened to Eight Is Enough? Rides with my dad to the comic book store, fireworks at Hyde Park like bombs in July, and a Christmas ornament wearing my face. The days are gone, yet still remain a vital part, a link to chain past to present in memory, a living personal history. Whatever happened to Susan Day? I lost track of her in the seventh grade. When did she become so old? When I am still so very young. End poem.
Wow. wonderful read, Laurent. And, I mean, that's a touching poem. You know, it really captures all the essence of being used and watching life fly by as like a dream. And then, you know, remembering it as you go. So I really enjoyed the poem and your read, Laurent. I like, days are gone, yet still remain a vital part, a link to chain, past to present, in memory, a living personal history. It's a beautiful poem on the subject of reflecting on memories. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, this one blew me away. I was literally going to turn on The Night Stalker on MeTV.
Oh, God, I love The Night Stalker.
It starts in five minutes on MeTV just before I called. I was watching the old Dracula with, I think, what is his name, Christopher Plummer.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
The Horror of Dracula
Plummer, yeah,
on Sven Gulli. You know, so I am a little bit old soul, so I do this a little bit before my time, but I still pick up these references because I still love the TV and I love this. Mm-hmm. So these references really hit home with me because I picked up on them. But you know what happened at the end, though, when I am still so very young, you know, you just – in your, it's what you hear so often is that in your mind you don't really, you know, it's like you're wondering what's going on. You still feel young. You still feel these things, but you can still recognize, you know, there's still just that life putting it right in your face that you're not that young anymore, and the things that used to be are gone. So very good piece and very well written.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. And Lee, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree with everybody's comments. Just because you're older doesn't mean you don't like nostalgia. I watch Pluto TV. It's free upload. And they have news and classics and the old game shows. They have everything on here. The Partridge Family, I keep seeing that little bird. You know, the $6 million band. You know, that noise that they would make when they were powering up. You know, you can go and watch all, like I said, you can watch, load up all these classic Fantasy Island. Yeah, that was okay. But Night Stalker, oh yeah, he was my man. I thought he was fantastic. I loved his personality. I loved it. See, and I liked this Carol Burnett. I still watch her on Pluto TV. I watch her shows. It is just hilarious. Some of these, I don't, Mr. Limpet, I don't, is that the one where he turns into a fish or something? Don Knotts? I'm not too sure. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, you would come home from school and watch your favorite shows were coming up, or at night, you know, the different series that come up. Some of these I'm not familiar with, you know. We still have ice cream trucks that go around here, but now it's not the same thing. They play this horrible song that it just grits your teeth. And, you know, the thing is just like we age, they age. But what's great about it is that we can go back and see them in the past and enjoy these programs. I love this poem. It's awful fantastic.
Excellent comment, Liu. Thank you. And Aquatic Life of Fanatic, very limited. Don Knotts falls into the sea and transforms into a fish, quickly becoming pals with a crab and developing a romantic bond with a female fish as a human. Henry was passed over for naval service, but now that he's a fish, he seeks out his friend, Lieutenant George Stickle. Finding him on a small boat in the Atlantic, Henry explains that he can alert sailors when enemy ships are close by, and soon he's helping America win World War II, and that's a 1964 film. But what did you think of the poem, Laurie?
It brought up the old resentment that I felt, because my mother never allowed a TV in our house until I was like 16 years old, and even then completely controlled what programs were viewed. So there's a lot of common stuff out there that I just have no memory of. I mean, I've heard of most of these particular programs, but I can do remember Red Light, Green Light. I thought that was a great... I did experience Buffalo blizzards, because I don't live very far from Buffalo, maybe an hour and a half. And there was a time,
wow.
Oh boy, especially I remember 78, god damn. But as a look back, this is really nonpareil. There's so many familiar tropes all the way through this, because I haven't seen them, I've heard of them. I never particularly liked Eight Is Enough. I got to say that. But riding my father to the comic book store and the fireworks and all the things that we love growing up. But the ending, when did she become so old when I'm still so very young? In our mind's eye, you know, when we're reliving memories, we see ourselves as young, because we were young then. And then to come across a young face that is now old can be shocking. And it's been said already tonight that, yeah, if we look in the mirror, we'd realize we were that old as well. Great piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Laurent, Dexter, and Liu for calling in to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. Much love, poets. Have a great night.
Love you guys.
Besotes.
Besotes a Laurent, Dexter, and Greg.
Good night,
everybody.
Good night, Laurent and Dexter.